instead of at the Free Stampede Day. Way to go. Just want to affirm that. There's another free day on, you know, Wednesday if you have kids. So, and it's always better to go on the not free day because the lineups aren't so long. So there you go. I'm trying to make you feel better. We did go stampeding yesterday. And so since we're in the book of Ruth, I wanted to show you that we've got, I brought a little piece of barley back from the stampede. So this is what barley looks like, and barley. So for all of the kids in the kids section say, I don't know what barley even is, here's your little object lesson today, so that'll be cool. We're going to have a little bracket, just a couple of minutes we need to take. We need to have an official business meeting in the middle of our service, and then we're going to get back. We have a reader's theater and a message and everything. So we just need to do a little bit of housekeeping business. And let me explain what it is. We have a number of elders who are serving, and they get elected in November. And so our elders currently are Tom Chin. You want to just wave because some people maybe don't know. And Kiji and Mark Ng. And Wilbert, I think he's working today. Oh, there he is. Okay. Hi, Wilbert. Okay, so those are our four elders. And every year we need to we change over some of our elders. And we also need a nominating committee to kind of search out who would be our elders for the next year. And by bylaw of our church, we need to have done that about 2 weeks ago. And I kind of forgot. These things happen. And so we're doing it today. And so what I need is, we're going to establish, I'm calling this now an official business meeting, and I just need one volunteer who would be willing to be a part of the nominating committee, who would not sort of be in contact with elders and potential elders, and we will work together as a committee. Myself and Mark Ng are on that committee, and then we need one more person who is not an elder and not a pastor. Caroline. That's a loving surprise. And would anyone else affirm the fact that she could be our congregational representative? There you go. I'm going to call that good. Well, great. That's the end of our business meeting. So it didn't take long and it wasn't that painful. And thank you, Lord. Thank you, God. See, these are the parts that pastors worry about. And I go, what if nobody wants to do this? And, you know, and then we worry about that. Okay. So I'm going to call the Reader's Theater up and we're going to get back into our story. All right. We're going to need some mics. So I'm going to need a couple of hand mics, please.
Check.
You got one? Okay.
Test. Ooh, hot.
Okay.
Gaylene, you want to test?
Test, 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 test.
Test,
test. Yes.
Hello, test. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi,
let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.
Go ahead, my daughter.
So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters.
The Lord be with you.
The Lord bless you.
Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters,
who does that young woman belong to?
She's a Moabite who had come back from Moab with Naomi. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters." She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter.
So Boaz said to Ruth,
"My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled."
At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him,
"Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?"
"I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you didn't know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge."
"May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You've put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I don't have the standing of one of your servants."
At mealtime, Boaz said to her,
"Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar."
When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men.
"Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her."
So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to 10 kilograms. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her,
"Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you."
"The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz."
"The Lord bless him. He hasn't stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man's our close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers."
"He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all of my grain.'"
"It'll be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed."
So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Well, thank you, Reader's Theater. Okay. Well, let me ask you a question that some of our young people might be able to answer a little bit more quickly than our adults. Who's your favorite superhero, Marvel or DC? Okay. Is it Superman? You know, the guy who can fly super fast and strong as steel, and he's almost indestructible except for kryptonite? Or do you enjoy watching a heroic battle of a character that's a little more human, but has combined his unique strengths with ordinary courage and passion to do what's right? There's a lot of polls on the internet, I found out this past week, but I decided to go with Ranker, over 74,000 voters and cast over 1 million votes, and here's what they came up with. Number 10, Wonder Woman. All right. Number 9, Thor. Number 8, the Hulk. Number 7, Captain America. Number 6, Iron Man. Number 5, the Flash. Number 4, Superman. You thought he was number 1? No. Number 3, I was kind of surprised, Wolverine. Yeah, number 2, Spider-Man, and number 1, Batman. Okay, Enoch, would you take a stand and show everybody your T-shirt? Here's my, check it out. is Batman today. All right. As many of you know, we're in the middle of a series on the book of Ruth. And in chapter 2, we're going to see the actions of three different superheroes, a woman, a man, and Yahweh. And this message is entitled, Chesed Superheroes. And I'm going to explain the word chesed later in the message. But before we begin our story, I want to show us a real life example that's maybe a little closer to human being. It happened just recently. And I heard this on Shine FM, and I wanted to relay this to you. I want us to watch a real-life superhero, one that's not quite just the superhero in the Marvel in DC. Can we take a look at this?
I don't care what you're going through. When God called you for help, you're supposed to help. Period. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. I don't care what you're going through personally. When He stopped you to tell you to help, you're supposed to help. Period.
Well, there's a story. A woman, wheelchair broke down, electric wheelchair, had no way of getting home. A guy's jogging by and he pushes her all the way home. Took him a half hour to push her home. And I love what he says. When God calls you to help, I don't care what you're doing, you're supposed to help. Period. Man, I like that. That'll preach. All right. So we're going to look at Ruth chapter 2 today, and you've heard the reading already, but I want to look. I believe there's three superheroes, and Ruth is the first one. She's the Wonder Woman that we first see. What's heroic about Ruth? First of all, she was willing to risk. She left her father, her mother, her homeland, and she came with Naomi to Bethlehem, a place that she's never been to, where she would be a foreigner. Ruth has a strong faith, like Abraham, who left his people and homeland to go to a place where God would lead him. Ruth made a radical covenant to make Naomi's God, Yahweh, her God. Ruth is also willing to work in the fields that carried the possibility of physical danger. She's willing to risk to provide for Naomi and herself. That's heroic, willingness to risk. Second thing, Ruth was willing to sacrifice. Chapter 2, verse 11 says, Boaz knew all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. Naomi was the only person Ruth knew in the new country of Israel. She left all of that in Moab, her culture, her language, her comfort, to go help her mother-in-law, Naomi. And she sacrificed. Her sacrifice for her mother-in-law didn't go unnoticed. So let's take a look at, here we are in verse 2. Ruth showed initiative. Naomi used to be a wealthy lady. Now she's almost lost everything. There's two people, there's two widows. They're practically on the edge, they're on the edge of poverty. And Ruth has a plan. It's not a very detailed plan. It's just, I got to go to work. And she says, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. She didn't have any contacts, so she went into the fields trusting God to provide for her. She's willing to work instead of rely on charity. You know, some people ask for handouts when they're poor. Ruth just asked for a chance to work. The nobility of Ruth's character is made clear by her willingness to work and spare Naomi the possible humiliation from those who had known her in her former affluence. She didn't want Naomi to have to go to work. Naomi might have been in her 50s, let's say. Ruth was young and she said, I'm going to go do what I can. By Levitical law, the poor were entitled to barley and wheat that fell from the hands of the reapers. Leviticus 23 says, when you reap the harvest of your land, don't reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Leave them for the poor or for the foreigner residing among you. I am the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 24 says pretty much the same thing. When you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, don't go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Now, even though the law made provision for the poor, you still had to ask the landowner, get permission. And that's what Ruth did. She asked permission. She didn't assume her right. She went and asked permission from the foreman. Wise worker. Ruth was a hard worker. Verse 7, she went into the field and worked steadily from morning until evening. That's a long day. And then in evening, after she had reaped all of that barley, she had to kind of smack it so that it would loosen all the chaff away and get the grain before you can mill it and get the wheat and the, you know, the, or the, get the flour from it. It's a lot of work. The Septuagint says she hadn't even rested a little. When you work hard, bosses notice. When you show up late, you take lots of breaks and leave early, bosses notice. And Ruth earned the reputation of hard worker on her first day at work. Her foreman noticed, her boss or the owner noticed, and Naomi noticed. Ruth came home with 22 liters of barley, about a 10-kilogram sack of grain. And then she still had to thresh it all out. In one day's work, she gathered enough for her and Naomi to eat for a whole week. Because she's a hard worker. And one more thing. She is heroic because she was grateful and humble. She bowed down with her face to the ground. That's a humble and posture to express gratitude. She says, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me a foreigner? She knew her humble position in society. She was a foreigner and she was a woman. She was at the very lowest place in society. She had no sense of entitlement. She was grateful for the favor she was getting from the big boss. She said, I don't have the standing of one of your servant girls. So she wasn't even like a worker. She was just at the very end. She was humble and she was grateful. You know, gratefulness and humility go together a bit like cheese on pizza. If you have an exalted view of yourself, it's a bit hard to be grateful, right? Because you deserve better than the way you're being treated. And you should get paid more. And people should treat you with more respect. And there's sort of that attitude that comes. But if you have a humble view of yourself, gratefulness comes easier. Somebody treats you kindly, oh, and you're grateful. You can be grateful for your paycheck and grateful for your friends and grateful for God's goodness. If you don't think you deserve it all, everything that you get is a wonderful gift. Ruth was a heroic person in this story. But there's another one that I think is maybe even more heroic. It's Boaz. What's heroic about Boaz? Well, first of all, he was a man of standing. Some translate the Hebrew words Ish Gibor Ha'il as mighty man of valor. So Gideon and Jephthah were also called mighty men of valor. So it may be that Boaz was a war hero. And certainly in the days of the judges, when this story takes place, there was constant unrest and violence and even civil war. So Boaz is a man of standing. He's a wealthy landowner, but most importantly, he has a rich and noble character that matches his wealth and standing in society. He was a man of blessing. He said, "The Lord bless you." Now, that may have been simply a cultural greeting, but some rabbis assert that Boaz instituted the custom of greeting in the name of God. But other things later in the story tell us, this was his character. This is who he was. He wanted to bless the workers. He was ready to bless a foreigner. He blesses Ruth in verse 12. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge. That sounds like a prayer of blessing to me, doesn't it? Do you pray for your employees? Do you pray for newcomers to your country? That's what Boaz is doing. In blessing Ruth, he conjures up one of the most beautiful pictures of divine care in all of Scripture. He speaks about Ruth as a defenseless baby bird who might be comforted and protected by the wings of a mother. And he says, Yahweh is like that mother bird. God is like a mother bird putting the wings around Ruth. And Ruth felt comforted by the kind words that Boaz spoke. I remember when we were in Russia in our very first year as mission workers, we got evaluated. It was a number system. And, you know, we got a lot of, like out of five was good and, you know, one was bad. And we got a lot of, you know, threes and fours. And somehow it, even though it was probably like we were probably just average mission workers, it didn't feel very good not to get like top marks. I remember later, it meant some years later, our field director was a different field director. And what he decided to do was go through, now I'm going to start tearing up just thinking about it, go through every one of our mission workers and just saying the good things that they were doing at the end of the year. And I can still remember how we felt. Lifted up, encouraged. What kind of a boss do you want to work for? And what kind of a boss are you going to be if you're in that place? Man, I want to speak more kindly to others, to new Canadians, to people in my church, to people in my family. I got four ladies at home, friends. And sometimes I'm grouchy and harsh, and that doesn't bless them. But when I'm kind and encouraging, I give life and blessing to my family, I want to be more like Boaz. All of his words are gracious and generous and compassionate. Friends, he's a fantastic example. He's heroic in his character, and he's a terrific employer. Why is he a terrific employer? He noticed people. Verse 5, whose young woman is that? Some bosses don't care about lowly employees. Here's a boss who noticed a new worker. He took the time to talk to Ruth and care about her, and he mentored her on her first day at work. He says, don't go there, and stay here, and watch the field where the men are working, and when you're thirsty, get a drink. The best thing an employer can do is making sure the onboarding procedure for new employees works well. You know, like the very first day, the very first week, what's going to happen? That's so important. And here's a guy who had thought that through, and he acted on it. And he firmly established appropriate work culture. Did you catch it when they were reading? Boaz says, I've told the men not to touch you. It's 2018. We're about 3,000 years, let's say, after this story takes place. But what's the problem that the Me Too movement has shone the bright spotlight on? That there's sexual harassment in the workplace, and it's not okay. And it's still happening, and it shouldn't. And there should be zero tolerance. And it's a smear on the reputation of the broader church, that church-sponsored schools were responsible for sexual molestation and pedophilia. Boaz was a different kind of employer. He took responsibility for the culture of his farm organization, and he told the men not to touch Ruth, the foreigner. Okay, so she's lowly, she's the end cast, and nobody would even notice her. But he noticed, and he said, this is a big field, and I'll bury you in it if you touch her. Right? Man, that's got some strength to it. And later on, he told his workers, even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Pull out some stalks for her from the bundles. Leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her. Look at the way that, again, Boaz protects his new worker. He doesn't allow the men to make fun of her. See, some environments, some work environments tolerate humiliation. Boaz didn't want shame to be part of his work organization. He did everything he could to make her first day and her first week a great one. Boaz set the parameters that forbade inappropriate sexual touching and shaming of any kind. This is the way that Christian managers should be known. Didn't get an amen, but I bet you believe it in your heart. He ate with his workers, and he provided a proper wage. You know, at mealtime, he said to Ruth, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." In that culture, eating isn't just to satisfy hunger. Meals are an expression of hospitality. And when Boaz, the landowner, offers some roasted grain to the rookie employee, the lowest in the social caste, do you think the other employees took notice? You think they figured something out about his values? That there's no difference between the officer and the enlisted workers? It couldn't have gone unnoticed by the other harvesters. He modeled the way to treat foreigners with compassion and generosity and acceptance. And the Bible says, don't muzzle the ox, right? Feed the workers. Boaz offered Ruth enough food so there was some left over for Naomi when she got home. Ruth tucked a little bit in her take-home box, right? And when she got home, you know, she fed Naomi some of what she ate for lunch. You know, my kids love it when I bring home a little bit. You know, I go out to eat and I put a little take-home box and, you know, they love that. That's fun for them. How much more when you're living in a famine? Boaz said, whenever you're thirsty, get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled. In ancient Near East culture, foreigners would draw water for the Israelites, and women draw water for the men. So for Boaz to say that the woman can drink from what the men draw, friends, this is mind-blowing countercultural thinking. Boaz treats Ruth with dignity and respect and kindness as an equal rather than an underling. Men, let's take notes. Boaz went far beyond what the law required. He treated Ruth with chesed, with covenant compassion and kindness. Boaz was compassionate. He heard all about what Ruth had done for Naomi. She came all the way from a foreign country to care for her mother-in-law, and he's genuinely impressed. And the irony is that he's ready to outdo Ruth in her compassion. He blessed Ruth. He mentored her. He protected her by clearly explaining to the men the sexual boundaries. He protected her by forbidding the men to embarrass her or rebuke her. He even found ways to provide for her without embarrassing her or without treating her like a charity case, right? Pull out some stocks and leave them. And, you know, Proverbs says, whoever is kind to the needy honors God. And Boaz honored God. And perhaps the fact that Naomi was a relative helped Boaz respond compassionately. But when Naomi saw that Ruth brought home a sack full of barley, 10 kilograms or whatever it is, she knew that Ruth must have been gleaning in the field of a particularly friendly owner. And she wanted to know where Ruth worked to bring home so much grain. And Ruth answers, "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz." Stop. Ruth didn't work with Boaz. She worked for him. She worked under him. She worked, you know, behind him. But she thinks she worked with him because of the way that Boaz treated her compassionately. Naomi responded, "Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Naomi was smart enough to know that reapers picking up leftovers, they don't come home with 10 kilograms of grain. It just doesn't happen. If she kept harvesting at that rate, by the end of the harvest period, she would have gathered enough food for the whole year. And it just had one explanation all over it. Boaz. He was way more like a loving father than a businessman. he offered a foreign woman his protection and his resources. Now, let me explain why I think Boaz's example is so inspiring to me. I think it's inspiring because it's in alignment with the character of God. Boaz is compassionate as God is compassionate. Boaz cares for the poor as God cares for the poor. God has chesed. So chesed is covenantal love. It's compassionate generosity. It's kindness. It's mercy. It's all these things and wrapped up into one rich word. And Boaz shows chesed to Ruth. Boaz imitates God, and that's why it's so inspiring and worthy of our imitation. There's great joy and fulfillment when we align ourselves with the character of God. So God says, be holy, for I am holy, right? And when we pursue holiness, we experience spiritual closeness with God because God is holy. Holiness honors God. So Jesus says, give, and it will be given to you. Pressed down, good measure, shaken together, running over, it will be poured back into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So when we're generous givers, we experience joy. Why? Because it's in alignment with the very nature and character of God. Friends, if you don't hear anything else I'm saying, understand this principle that I'm trying to teach you this morning. The alignment of Boaz's character with God is precisely in his compassion for the poor. God is going to bless Boaz because of his compassion. And if you want to learn how, you have to come back next week. But I don't think Boaz was doing it in order to be blessed. He was compassionate because somewhere, somehow, he learned that's who God is. Psalm 146 says, God upholds the cause of the oppressed and gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoner free. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. The Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all he has made. The Lord upholds all who fall and lifts up all who are bowed down. The eyes of all look to you, and you give them their food at the proper time. You open your hand and satisfy the desires of every living thing. God is compassionate and cares for the poor. And if that's what God is like, that's how we should respond. And that's how Boaz responded to a despised Moabite woman. And more than once, as I read this text, maybe I'm just becoming a softy in my old age or something, I don't know. But as I was reading in my office, I started tearing up because I said, this is how I want to live. And that's how believers in our church ought to live and strive to live, with compassion for the poor and the needy. And the wings of God's compassion aren't just for well-off Canadian believers, they're meant for poor, struggling foreigners. Are you hearing me this morning? You see, I think that there's a hidden hero here, and it's God. God's the third hero in this story, because I love verse 3. It says, as it turned out, Ruth found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Ruth had no idea where to find a job. She's unskilled. She's ready to work hard. She goes to the first field she can find, and lo and behold, it's a field of a relative of her deceased father-in-law. What odds? What odds? And some people would call this luck and chance and good fortune. Just got the right fortune cookie. But for the righteous believer, it's the result of the guiding hand of God's compassionate providence. See, the author of this text is using irony. He writes as if Ruth started working in the field by a stroke of luck, but in reality, he's begging the reader to see the hand of God. Friends, it takes eyes of faith to see the hand of God in apparent coincidences. I'll say it again. It takes eyes of faith to see the hand of God in apparent coincidences. God's sovereignty and gracious providence are at work in this story. And all of Ruth's hard work, it wouldn't have been nearly as fruitful if she'd been working in the field of a different owner. God led her to a place of blessing. She's come a long way from Moab. She's come to take refuge under the wings of God. And God extends his wings over Ruth and Naomi by providentially bringing Ruth to the very field of Boaz and by opening up Boaz's heart to be generous to Ruth. When Ruth gets back home from the first day of work and tells about Boaz, Naomi says, "The Lord bless him. Yahweh hasn't stopped showing his chesed to the living and the dead." Boaz is a close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers. Here's the way the Message Bible translates that verse. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Why, God bless that man. God hasn't quite walked out on us after all. He still loves us in bad times as well as good." See, the word chesed means covenantal loving kindness. And Ruth showed chesed to Naomi. And Boaz shows chesed to Ruth. And God shows chesed to Naomi, to Ruth, to Boaz, the living, to the dead relatives of Naomi by keeping the family alive, and to all of us in 2018. This story, friends, isn't just about Naomi. It's about anyone who finds hope in God again. This story isn't just about Ruth. It's about anyone who's works hard to care for family and seeks refuge in God. This story isn't just about Boaz. It's an example for all of us in the way that we should extend kindness, chesed, to employees and foreigners. A kinsman redeemer, in the Hebrew it's goel, is one who rides in to save the day. A kinsman redeemer had both rights and duties. He had the right of buying the property of his dead relative before it was offered for public sale. And he had the responsibility of making sure clan property never passed out of the clan. He was the avenger of blood in the event of murder. It was his duty to buy back relatives who sold themselves into slavery because of poverty. And it was his duty to make sure family lines didn't disappear by taking widows in marriage. And in Ruth chapter 2, we see Boaz showing loving kindness to Ruth and Naomi by generously providing for them, helping them out of poverty. But if you want the love story, if that's interesting to you, you got to come back next week and see how it kind of works out. But for this week, we need to understand that Jesus is our kinsman redeemer. See, this is why the story of Boaz is so moving, because Boaz foreshadows the way in which Jesus, the Son of God, cares for us. Jesus has a heart to bless us. He speaks kindly to us. He's the one who rules well. He humbled himself to eat with those whom he created. Jesus established how church culture should operate without a hint of inappropriateness or sexual harassment. Jesus is compassionate. He feeds the poor and touches lepers and heals the sick and the blind. He watches over the foreigners and sustains the fatherless and the widows. And Jesus took our sin on himself and offers us his forgiveness and his righteousness. And he buys us back from slavery and offers us a place in his family. God hasn't stopped showing kindness to us. He's compassionate and he cares about you and your needs. Well, I need to finish. I don't know that any of us are going to be in a farmer's field this next week where we can allow widows to work, right? But there's a lot of ways that we can show God's chesed to others, like Ruth and Boaz did. We can show it in our family relationships, where we stick close to one another no matter how desperate the situation is. That's chesed. We can show it at work. Boaz was an awesome example of a boss who showed chesed to his workers. We can show it to new Canadians who come to our country and are struggling to find housing and work and enough food to provide for their families. Friends, 30% of Calgarians weren't born in Canada. That means 3 out of the 10 people that you're going to meet this next week, they're foreigners of some kind. And I don't know how many of them had refugee status, probably not all of them. But here's what God says in Deuteronomy chapter 10. God defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. And you are to love those who are aliens, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt. Man, I want our church to be known as a church that loves the orphans and the widows and the newcomers to Canada. When we show God's chesed to others, we demonstrate loyalty to Christ, who first showed chesed to us. Jesus said, "By this will all men know that you're my disciples, if you have chesed for one another." Chesed comes from God, and everyone who shows chesed has been born of God and knows God. Well, I want you to meditate on this as we watch a concluding video, and then I'm going to come and release us with a benediction.